Hi, this is Stephanie Gunning of GetABookDealCoach.com, and we're here for a webinar called Author Branding, Developing Name Recognition for You and Your Books. And we're speaking today with marketing specialist June Clark, founder of Get There Media, about the very important role of branding in your success as an author. June Rifkin-Clark is president of Get There Media, a promotion services company that provides strategic guidance to authors and experts by building brands and creating awareness to consumers and the media. During her career, she has helped write and promote successful campaigns and materials for cable networks and consumer product companies. Her work has garnered several awards, including a Cable Ace Emmy Award. After receiving her master's in writing and publishing from Emerson College, June became a literary agent at Fine Print Literary Management, specializing in nonfiction books. She has also written or co-authored 6 books of her own and frequently leads workshops at writers' conferences. Her website is getthermedia.com or juneclark.com. So welcome, June. I'm really glad that you could come on tonight.
Yeah, me too. This is my first official webinar. You do this before? Yes, I've never done this before. I mean,
well,
I've been recorded speaking, but not. I've done some like radio interviews, but nothing that was interactive like that.
Well, it's very similar in that we have a conversation, and we, you know, we can cover as much ground as we can cover in an hour, which obviously we don't have to rush. And if we have some time, there is a possibility for listeners to ask questions. And the way that a listener will do that is, you can either push the button on the screen and type a question in on the Q&A box there, and I'll be monitoring that here on my computer, or you can raise your hand, and the way you do this is by pressing *2, and then I see on my dashboard, I see that you're waiting in line to ask a question. So we'll get to questions if we can, and periodically I might ask you if you have a question. Otherwise, sit back and enjoy. So let's get started. So what is branding and what is author branding specifically?
Okay, well, you know, branding is obviously, you know, how it's kind of like the persona or the impression that you're giving out about yourself publicly. And I want to make a little bit of a differentiation, because a lot of people, mostly in the publishing and authors and writing field, always hear this terminology, you have to have a platform. And the platform, in a sense, is sort of the beginning stages of developing a brand. I mean, they're nuanced. They're kind of the same, but they're different. So I want to just sort of cover that. Basically, a platform consists of several elements. If the reputation you have in your field, your expertise on the subject for which you are writing your book about, and then most importantly, the connection and outreach you have to a specific target audience of readers or followers or fans or whatever that is, and that's how that would work.
So that's
the branding
platform part.
So this is something that in today's world of publishing has become incredibly critical to not just the success of an author in their book, but also in the decision to getting somebody published, because the publishers want to see that whoever it is that they're going to sign up as an author can bring a ready-made audience to buy that book once it's published.
Right.
So that becomes critical. And many, many authors don't have that in place, and they start a little too late to cultivate that. And so I hope one of the purposes of having this conversation is for people to understand that it's really, you should start now. You should start examining these things now, so that when there comes a point, because everybody calling in is going to be at a very different stage in their writing. Some may have ideas about books they wish, you know, they want to write, but they haven't put the first word down. Some people may have a draft of a manuscript. Some people may have an idea. Maybe they have a proposal in one chapter. So they're all at different stages. And what I want you to know is that as you're thinking up your book idea, you should simultaneously be thinking about, what do I have out there that represents who I am that I can develop? And that could be tools such as having a website, having a blog, having written articles on subjects related to the book that you're writing.
Oh, wait. Let's talk about branding, because people have heard me talk to death about platforms.
Okay.
What's different about branding? Yeah, what's different
That's
about branding?
The platform. Where the branding comes in is if you've set yourself up already and using these platform tools, then you're going to want to differentiate yourself from other people who are doing something similar to yourself. So, for example, this is a silly thing, but I just thought about it this morning. I went to Target to pick up a prescription. And as I'm walking down the aisle, there's a big sign. And in the cold section, you know, where they have all the drugs for the cold, and there was like a sign, and there's a picture of a guy, and he's the sneeze whisperer. And I thought, it made me really laugh, and I thought to myself, you know, I have to remember this, because I think that would be a really great anecdote for something. And that's a brand. Target is now, they have their official sneeze whisperer mascot. And if you have a cold, you know, you can go down this aisle and you can find those things. And as you know, like, there are so many different whisperers out there. You know, you have the original, I believe, was Cesar Millan.
Horse whisperer, yeah.
The horse whisperer. Well, that was and I know there is a guy whose name escapes me who is a horse whisperer. And you have the baby whisperer and whatever. But the thing is, that became their brand. They found a way to put themselves out there and promote themselves that there could be numerous people writing on that same topic, dog training. And yet, Cesar Millan figured out an angle to be able to, you know, have a catchy phrase or something that made him stand out from the other people in his field. And that's part of what branding, you know, branding is and branding does.
So what are the key elements of a successful brand? How do you know something is a brand as opposed to just a product?
You know, I think that a lot of it has to do with the ingenuity of the person, and the creativity of the person and their ambition. The other thing is, I think, to have a really good understanding about who you are marketing to. And one of the things that I think becomes critical, and lots of times people don't really pay attention to it, everybody feels everything they do is for all audiences. And I think that the best way to start is to single out a handful of target audiences that you think would be immediately the most appropriate people that you would want to sell yourself, your services, or your book to. And once you can start honing in on that, you know, you'll know if you understand who that audience is and what they respond to and what they like, because probably you're part of that audience also.
Right.
So you can start, you know the ins and outs of that enough, your orientation is there enough to start knowing what certain buzzwords are, what certain trends may be, and if you take those into account, and it does take a bit of creativity and research and talking to other people who are in your own field to determine how you can break yourself out from, you know, the mold.
Okay, so can we paint a picture for the listeners? Can we, let's name some authors who actually have a brand.
John Gray.
John Gray, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From
Mars.
Venus, relationships. I just think he's the guy who says men and women are different, and he's the guy who talks about relationships.
Yeah, Susie Orman.
Money for women.
Exactly.
Right.
But I think John Gray is even a better example, because what happened is that the Mars and Venus concept almost took on a life of its own.
Mm.
He just had a catchy title and a catchy way of describing the differences between men and women, how they're alike and how they're different, and how they get along in some ways and conflict in others, to try to make sense of that for relationships. And what happened is that whole Mars and Venus thing caught on in such a way, it was so catchy, that it became, people were copying that. You know, cats are from, you know, Saturn, and dogs
right, and dogs are from Pluto or whatever.
Exactly. And then they also began to do, you know, like merchandising off of that. They had what's called brand extension. Mm. So it was Venus and Mars, the game. Venus and Mars, the workbook. The retreat, the cruise. I think there was a television series at one point, very short-lived. I believe it.
If it happened today, there would be.
Yeah, and that's a successful brand. Now, was that so premeditated? They sat there and said, "Oh well, we're gonna, you know, sort of roll this out to become all these things." I don't know. You know, I would say in more cases than not, you know, back in the day, at the time that he was published, that probably was not what they were thinking. You know, he probably
well,
had.
Well, they were probably thinking about. I mean, it was at HarperCollins when I was there, and I know that they knew they were onto a bestseller.
Mm-hmm.
That but, for sure they knew, and so
yeah,
they probably were thinking two or three books down the line,
right,
but not necessarily coffee mugs. Yeah,
right. They were thinking in terms of books. Because they said, okay, now you can do Venus and Mars, you know, in these various, you know, and whatever. But the extension of that brand of Venus and Mars went, like, all over the place. I mean, it was just amazing. And that, I mean, that's a rarity. It doesn't always happen. But he was smart enough to know that people caught on to that, and he was able to go with it as fully as he could.
So if having a brand about people immediately registering the quality of the brand, is name recognition the only thing that defines a brand?
I think it's also, you know, usability. I mean, you know, somebody can have a name out there, but if it's not relevant to a particular individual, if they don't see an immediate correlation as to how they're going to benefit or how they're going to incorporate something into their life, that may not work as effectively.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it really, you know, I wish it was something that we could all, like, immediately figure out, like, what the secret to that is. But the truth of it is to put something out there in a way that's, you know, trendy, unique, has an edge, has a hook, so that people start to become conscious of it. And then
right.
they talk about it to other people, and that buzz gets created.
Right.
And I think, you know, the brands that do become most successful are the things that the general public can really embrace. They may start as a niche thing like relationships, and it may branch out into other areas. You know, it could be your relationship with your boss, you know, and other things.
So should an author specifically be trying to brand the name of the book or their own name?
I think that really depends on the person and the product. I mean, some books, if you're writing fiction, for example, that's a little difficult. You know, not everybody who's an author is writing a nonfiction book on some prescriptive self-help or a cookbook or,
right.
you know, a parenting book or something.
Well, sometimes, when I say Harlan Coben, everybody knows great mysteries, page turners, contemporary, you know.
But and followed the success of you know, his being able to write great books that people want to read.
Right, but he's a brand. Harlan Coben
well,
is a brand.
That's
yeah.
as a result, that's sort of the opposite. You
mm-hmm.
know, the brand, people who are successful, who have successful books, and that's where I think the difference between fiction and nonfiction is that they become that way, unless you're Harry Potter. You know, that's
right.
another.
Right.
But at the time that, I'm sure at the time that J.K. Rowling was writing that book, she probably could not have envisioned what happened.
Nobody's a brand on their first book.
No.
Right, unless it's the first book Donald Trump writes.
Yeah.
In which case, he's already a brand. We know he's real estate,
that,
he's
yeah.
rich.
Yeah, already walked into
you know.
It. But that's the thing. A lot of people who are sort of have branded product then become books.
Yes.
They've done that. I know they've done that a lot in the children's book categories. Like, you know, I remember, you know, seeing a lot of children's books where they would use, you know, Cheerios. you know, there's Play School. They would take known brands and then they would create books out of them. You know, the Tootsie
Roll.
Yeah,
let's encourage everybody on this call not to do that. That's great.
No.
That's like, you know what, that's like when I go to the Thanksgiving parade and all the floats now are cartoons on TV on Saturday mornings. It makes me just a little nauseous.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So let me just clarify. A lot of the people who follow me and are probably on this call, they're nonfiction writers. Many are self-help writers.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
And yeah, some are very spiritual. Like, so for instance, a brand that's very recognizable to my community is Louise Hay.
Right.
And you know, so okay, great. So anyway, but please don't do that awful thing where it's product placement. I'm sure that that's quite good as a strategy, you know, to get attention.
No, I would rather, you know, sort of bring it back to the writer, you know,
yeah.
And not go there. We just sort of we did sort of veer off a little bit, but that's to the umpteenth degree. That's what would happen. But it does go both ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does go both ways. And I think it's everybody's dream that whatever it is that they write, it catches on in a way that, you know, they can maximize themselves. I mean, everybody wants to, you know, be successful or wants their books
right.
to be successful.
But is this really something that's under your control? I mean, is this something you can work towards?
You can't always guarantee the success, but you really should enjoy the process of taking a passionate stance towards really putting your book and yourself out there in a way. So at least you have the satisfaction of knowing that you did everything that you dreamed of doing for it. And then you have to put it into that point, if you know, for all the people who are tuning in who may be spiritual, you know, it is kind of in the hands of the universe to take it the next step. But I do think that there are specific tactics that one can do and try to do and put the effort forth in order to, you know, move these things forward. And I think that in this day and age, nobody is going to care about your book as much as you are. And
right.
So it really falls on the shoulders, not so much on the publisher anymore, but on the writer to really take the initiative and do whatever it takes to try to make the book successful.
Now, the one other person who's going to care is your reader.
Mm-hmm. But the reader has to...
If it's the ideal reader, if it's the person that you really are writing for... You're going to you're gonna rock their world.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's why I said knowing who your audience is becomes very critical.
Yeah. So before we get into steps that people can take and all that good stuff, let's just talk a little bit more about what a brand is, because I think that it's a concept that people hear, brand this, brand that, but beyond kind of like coming up with a name for yourself, like having a brand that has some substance is, in my opinion, is really the thing that's going to lead to sales. But how does having a brand actually help you sell more books? I guess, you know, what is the real benefit of having a brand versus just being an author with a good book?
Well, I think you always should be an author with a good book, without saying.
So that's the baseline. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that helps. I mean, there's so if you're true to what you're writing, and you know, as I said, you have passion and integrity, and you know, and you have a publisher or somebody behind you that is investing in the success of this, that you're already kind of on your way to doing something good. I think that. What happens with the branding thing, and I don't want to get too caught up in that. I mean, I think just using the word brand can be very intimidating to a lot
mm-hmm.
of people. I think what has to happen is that you need to – one doesn't wake up in the morning and says, aha, I got it. You really do have to spend some time thinking about what it is you want to say and who is it you want to be. You know, what is the thing that rings true the most for you? And, you know, how do you sort of package that in a way that's going to represent you the best as you can be represented to the people that you most want to reach. I know
now,
that.
Now, once you know, when you know your brand, doesn't it mean that you can let drop other activities?
Well, I don't know. I think that it really depends on the person.
I mean, look, if I said my brand was a personal finance guru, you know, somehow, like, you know, that's, that wouldn't be the name. But let's imagine that was the name, personal finance guru, the, you know. And then all of a sudden I started doing underwater basket weaving. That's not part of that brand.
No, but, I mean, you can, here's the thing. I mean, we're all very multifaceted. And I'm not saying that a person who, I think that you need to, if you want to develop a brand, you really should be sticking to that, until which point there's no reason that you can't do these other things on the side, but you may not want to be so public about it if you're trying to establish yourself one way. So I think let's just get back to where the author would be on this.
Right.
That if you have a book, and I, you know, I'm trying to think of an example of somebody who...
Crazy Sexy Cancer by Chris Carr. She's done four books with very similar titles. Yeah.
Okay. Well, she had a documentary film first.
Yes.
And so what happened was she was able to get a book that kind of mirrored this documentary that she made, and it had a very catchy title, and that became her brand, was so that, that you should be, you know, sort of like, you know, throw caution to the wind and go and pursue your dreams, because she had come from a place where, you know, she was, you know, diagnosed with a kind of illness, and she didn't know whether she would be able to overcome that or not, and she went on a journey to try to, you know, find herself and find her strength and everything like that, and she healed, and she felt this tremendous need to be able to help others by sharing this wisdom, but she did it in a way that was very, you know, kind of fresh and trendy and out there, and she knew who her market was. They were other women like herself, and she wanted them to become fearless, and so she was able
and
to
healthy.
Yeah, with this. Well, now she's doing.
She did recipes. She did a
diet.
She did do a memoir.
And now it's the diet. I think the diet book is out there and doing
quite well. So she does yoga and all that stuff, and she's very motivational. Totally authentic
brand extension. See,
right, but she didn't. That's not a contrived brand because she lived it.
She lived it. But what happened was because that her story resonated with a lot of people. She knew who her audience was.
Mm-hmm.
That resonated by having this, you know, crazy sexy life and crazy sexy cancer and all that. That became the brand. Everybody remembered that name because nobody would have thought to put cancer in that kind of light. They wouldn't
call
have seen
it sexy.
That.
Yeah.
So, you know, she may not, that may have just been something, she probably toiled over coming up with a great title, but the title then became her brand.
Yeah.
So sometimes these things have a way of taking on a life of their own. So, and that's why I was saying that sometimes when you're determining this, there's a lot of trial and error involved. You know, you could start with being, whatever, crazy, sexy, financial guru, whatever. And you need to see what catches on. Sometimes the title of your book becomes your identifier for your brand. Sometimes you just do.
Right.
As, you know, and I think that those are things that you come up with by, you know, brainstorming, talking to friends, family members, reading, looking at things, being conscious about how you look at how other things are named. I mean, it's hard to explain. I was in advertising for a good part of my career. So every time I would look at things, I would look with a mentality of what would be a great title, what would be a great slogan, what would be a great logo. And I had to, like, position my thinking around that. Was when you're working with products, you know, before I worked with authors, I worked with product. And I would always have to sort of find all the different angles around that product and how that would, you know, what could I say about it, or what could we say, what could be the slogan or the name or something that would appeal to a market that would be fresh and different. And with a product, unlike an author, sometimes you need to change the slogans. You know, you could go through history and see what, you know, Coke has had various things and the airlines have had various different, you know, slogans
over the
years. So really an author could do that. They could just
absolutely.
They could experiment with slogans.
Mm-hmm. You know, as their title or who they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like, you know, just to be a little bit more proactive to the listeners, you know, I think that I want to try to get you thinking about, see, it's hard because I'm not interacting with people here and I'm hearing a sense of what they're working on to kind of give them ideas about where they could find that inspiration. It should come from whatever it is they're writing about. And maybe, because most of these people have some expertise in the topics they're writing about, they would have a sense of who they are, what they want to say, and how they're going to differentiate themselves from the next person. And that is going to give them an opportunity to explore, you know, how they're going to name that.
Right.
And it could be something they come up with, it, or it could be the title of their book, or both, or whatever. But I think once you have that, one of the things I get asked a lot is when people have websites, they'll always say to me, should I have a website about me or should I have a website about the book? And I say, do both. You can always
right.
connect them to each other because you don't know. You want somebody to come in to find you any way they can. And if somebody hears about your book, they're going to Google the book title. You want to be able to be found readily by doing that. So you should have something set up for the book. But you should also have something set up for yourself because eventually that's going to, you know, come back to who you are and they're going to want to know who you are. Who is this person who wrote this book? Yeah, I'm very interested in this, but I want to know more about the author and I want to know more about who they are because if I read this and it's inspired me, I want to talk back to you as the author. Or if I have a question, I'm going to be able to know how to contact you as an author or become a fan of, I want to find out more about what you're going to write next.
Right, so a branded author is likely to attract fans. That's
mm-hmm.
people who want to read whatever they have to say. That's,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a really big thing. It's sort of like, you know, yeah. I mean, we can all think of people. Hey, I've got some questions on the screen. Let me read you a couple. Let me take care of an easy one. Lillian asks, is there a writers' conference in San Francisco? Yes, it's the San Francisco Writers' Conference. I believe it's this coming weekend. I think it's sold out, but if you go Google it online, you can find out. It's an annual event. We have one from Bill. He says, could you address any branding problems associated with having a pen name?
Ah. Not really. Have a
so
good lawyer.
Having a pen name is no different than having a regular name.
No, I mean, look, for a variety of reasons, some people don't choose to use their real name for a book. Maybe they don't like it. You know, it's the same way an actor, you know, decides to change their name because they want it to sound more less ethnic or whatever. Or if you want to have something that's catchier, say if you're a children's book author, you know, maybe you want to have something that sounds kind of fun. I don't see a problem with that. But I think, you know, with anything, I would say, like, Lemony Snicket.
Right.
You know, was it Daniel Handler, I think, is his real name.
His real name, yes, but he wanted mm-hmm. to have a fun name. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now he's coming out from behind the curtain, like the Wizard of Oz, and everybody knows who he is. And I think he's written, I know he just published a book recently.
Right, so he must have finished that series or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that he finally, he ran with that for a very long time, and then there was this, you know, shrouded in mystery, who is Lemony Snicket and all of that. But I think that was something he wanted to do purposely.
Now, can I throw into the mix, I think there is a drawback to trying mm-hmm. to brand a pen name. If your subject matter pertains to some of your professional skills and you're hiding who you are, then you can't really talk about the jobs you've had. In specifics,
I don't.
If you don't have that, though, it's irrelevant.
I think it's true. If you're writing nonfiction, if you're a doctor, you're not going to have, you know, who am I thinking of? Patch Adams, you know, with a clown nose and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah.
Yes, he was dealing with sick kids. So
well, he's a brand. He's a brand.
Yeah.
But that was his real name.
But you need some. But when you are an expert and a professional, clearly that's not going to work as effectively as if you're writing fiction. and you're going to write YA.
Yeah, my people are mainly nonfiction people,
right.
So yeah, I'm just, you know.
But it depends. That's what I'm saying. I mean, there's usually we'd have to sort of understand the reason why you felt.
I'll give you one of the reasons that a lot of people on this call would have. Because their spiritual beliefs are so fringe to the mainstream culture that they don't want anyone to know.
Oh, well.
That they're a medium or they believe in aliens. And they've written a book about that.
But they
don't want their colleagues to know it's them. I mean, that's actually a case where, you know, I actually would say it doesn't matter because the people in your professional life who aren't accepting of those views are not going to read that book anyway.
No, this is true. I'm a big believer in this. I think particularly when you're writing from your soul, which many of your, you know, your audience is, you need to be authentic. And I think that everybody out there knows that. And so if you have a passion about something, if something has happened in your life, if you have a particular gift, if you have a particular connection to spirit, and you're compelled to want to share that with people, I don't really think that's something that you should hide behind or feel uncomfortable about. I mean, think of Brian Weiss.
Right.
And
for those who are unfamiliar with him, he wrote Many Lives, Many Masters. He was an MD. He was a psychiatrist, an MD psychiatrist,
right,
who began realizing that patients of his were reporting past life memories, and it was very counter to what an MD could believe in. As he was supposed to be a rational scientist, and so he. Actually, I think he made his name because he was against the trend of what most doctors would say.
Right. He just his belief in what he was uncovering by doing that work with his patients was so profound that he was willing to risk his his reputation,
mm-hmm,
for doing that. My aunt happened to work in the hospital that he was in when all this started happening.
Wow.
But I think that he felt like. He knew this to be true. He knew it to be authentic, and he just said it was worth the risk for him. And clearly,
yeah,
it paid off because he's very, very well respected, and his books have sold well, and he's continuing to do very, you know, good work in that and exploring that because people are following his own path of curiosity. You know, because even if you're on the fence with what he's doing, whether you believe in it or not, you know, I mean, there are people on the fence. He believes it in it. And because he has a background in psychology and medicine and everything, when he writes about it, it's done from such an intelligent, heartfelt perspective that he can win a lot of people over with.
Well,
that.
I'll tell you another reason he wins people over. He was on the fence about it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He had
right.
trouble believing it, and
mm-hmm.
when he leads you down his journey to belief in this, you go with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he presents the evidence. So we have one more question.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Karen. She's a published author, and she has a self-funded cat rescue called Florida Cause for Paws. And she has a spokes cat who is a real cat whose name is Finn McCool. I like that name.
Oh,
and
adorable.
He's the magic leprechaun cat. And apparently there's an original Finn McCool who was this cat's namesake, who was the legendary hero of Ireland.
Right.
So she's written a bunch of short stories based on Irish legend and folklore and history with a little bit of leprechaun magic in them. And these have been published in 60 countries and all over the place. And she's about to publish his first book, which is an Irish holiday fairy tales. And she wants to know how she can best brand Finn and the work.
Ah, this is a little tricky because I don't know if there's any trademarks or things affiliated with that name.
I think it's a legendary name, so it's probably
mm-hmm.
not trademarked. It probably goes back so far, right?
Mm-hmm. But that may be something you want to just check on because if you're going to adopt that brand, then you're going to want to protect it. So you may want to consult with an attorney about that one. You know, that's a little tricky. Because
so magic leprechaun cat might be the trademark.
Yeah,
phrase.
Yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but when you have a name that, you know, historical, because even I heard of that, of course, a lot of pubs have been named that also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to make sure there isn't some chain of pubs in the United States. For some reason, when I said, Finn McCool's, I think I was there one. You know, I think that there's... No, I'm not kidding. I'm not saying that to be witty. I just know that there've been. I've seen.
No, but you're probably right because he's a hero. You know, he's a mythological figure.
That,
yeah.
That name would have been used by a lot of different ways. So I think you need to be careful. But I think the fact that you know now maybe the myth, you know, the leprechaun cat or something like that, and that's very adorable, and I really like that, and I think that you could really do well with that in terms of fundraising.
So she wants to know how is the best way to brand him.
Oh, I don't know I'd have to here's the thing that's tricky. I would need to sort of look at this stuff. And, you know, I'd want to see it, and I want to mm-hmm. see how it's used.
Yep.
It's very difficult to talk off the cuff without looking at it.
You know what, let me ask you a couple of questions about
yeah.
that. So if you get a client, how do you work with a client?
Oh, how do I work with a client?
Yeah, because you're an expert on this, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What would happen was that I'm going to want to do sort of a forensic expedition where I look at everything, you know, all of the tools and materials that client has. So, for example, I want to know about the charity. I want to know about the rescue. This interests me on a personal level because I'm a big cat lover and I'm, you know, I enjoy anything where animals are being taken care of and rescued and given good homes and all of that. So I have a certain, you know, kind of personal relationship to this. So it's, you know, I would want to sort of dig in and see, you know, what have you done to date with this? How has it been marketed? What tools do you have? Do you have a website? Are you blogging about it? Do you have, you know, information, flyers? Are you doing things with, you know, do you have some pet companies, you know, or pet food stores or something, some of the chains involved in it, you know.
Okay, so let me see if I can just, like, summarize that.
Right.
So one thing you look at is the tools that people are
mm-hmm.
using to communicate who they are.
Right.
And one thing that you're looking at is who are they partnered with?
Who are they, or if they are partnered with anybody, what
okay.
is the messaging being used? What has been done to date about the messaging?
And so a message would be like the tagline that we were talking about, the slogan.
It could be a tagline. It could also be, you know, the copy that's written in the flyers that are being put up around town or
mm-hmm.
ads. I'm not sure how the word has gotten out about this organization, so
right.
I would want to look at the history of how this evolved and what has happened and who's involved in it and, you know, who are contributing,
right?
And how is the community? How is this known in the community? And how does the community feel about it? I mean, there's so many different details.
So that's really interesting. I hear like four different things. So
mm-hmm.
so one thing that people, you know, I'm just looking for the abstracts here. So one thing that people need to look at is how do they communicate with the people that they intend to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's maybe looking at the media and how people have reported on them, how people feel about them, who, like, maybe you would go to your, how many people are following you on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one way of assessing if you're reaching people.
Media use.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't even, you know, are a little shy about it. They're gun shy about it. It seems
right.
overwhelming to them, so they do a minimal amount of it. But those are the things that I look at. I do kind of an assessment. I look at everything's been done, and we walk through that together, and so that gives me a very well-rounded picture of the status of that, you know, of that product or brand or book
mm-hmm.
or author to date to see what that is. And at that point, I need to sit down with that person and say, well, what do you want to have happen? You know, and then we start to develop this, you know, kind of like a blueprint.
Okay, so that's an incredibly important question, too. Like, you don't just randomly start shooting off more messages. You say, what do you want to have happen?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really, isn't that a question that everybody should ask themselves?
That's right. I mean, strategy is very important. I'm all
right.
about strategy. You know,
so for an author, what are typical answers to that question?
Which question?
what do I want to have happen here?
It's different for everybody. There isn't one set answer. Some people want to rule the world. Some people just want to, in this case, you know, wants to, you know, launch this book and make a very good, develop a good venture so that there's sales that fund, you know, this very good organization.
Mm-hmm.
So for somebody else, it could be they want to, you know, change people's lives. Or for somebody else, it's like I live this and I want other people to, you know, not make the mistakes I made. I mean, it could be everybody's vantage point is going to be different on this.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, sometimes when it comes to specific strategy, there isn't a one-size-fits-all here. There are certainly, as you know, there's tactics that we as professionals in the industry always recommend to writers to start doing. Have a website, have a great bio about yourself. If you have a book out already, you know, have some literature, you know, where you can have kind of a title sheet that talks about what your book is. Be on Facebook, be on, you know, write a blog, contribute to other people's blogs. There were all of these kind of various things that we know that everybody should be doing and not everybody is.
On this issue of name recognition, though, that means that every time you do one of these activities, your name has to be attached to it, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And in the case of, say, this character, you know, Finn McCool the cat, you know, he could have, you know, as I said, I don't know what the character has in order to say, wow, this is really, you've done this, you've been very effective doing these things, you know, where can we be more effective? And it's a matter I have to look at what's there. You know, I wish I could say, oh, okay, I can't. It's very hard to answer that question based on.
Yeah, well, we're just thinking in the abstract. I mean, like, when I think of brands, I think of Geico,
mm-hmm.
which is a car company. And first they have a little lizard. Before that they had cavemen. And now they've got this little pig. And I really like the pig because he always goes, and he's just cute. I don't have a car. I don't need any insurance. I hate most ads on TV, and this one makes me laugh.
Well, it's like the Affleck duck. Well, that's more like having a mascot. That's like the Affleck duck.
Yes.
You know, Affleck.
But I have a name recognition with that company, even though I don't use their service.
Mm-hmm. Well, because they had the gecko. Geico
right.
sounds like gecko, so they had the gecko, which is the little lizard guy.
Right.
That was there. And I think that the pig character came out of one of the commercials that they had been doing.
Right, so, right. So other people liked it besides me, so they figured mm-hmm. they'd use it some more. Yeah. So with an author, you know, I've heard you say before, it's not really the book that's being promoted so much as the author.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really true?
In the case of your audience here, if they're writing nonfiction, the author is going to become very important to that because they're the person who's bringing the credibility to that book. You know, the book is being published because that person has done very good work and is an expert in their field of endeavor and knows a lot about the topic on which they're writing. And so that person does need to come forward in a way that shows that, you know, they're standing behind, you know, this particular book. Now, if you're a person who's writing about, you know, who doesn't have that expertise and it's more about the book, you don't have the, you know, you're not the expert so much, but you have a great story to tell, then that may shift to be more about the book at hand. But I think that you have to take those on an individual basis.
Well, how long does it take to brand yourself? Because there's also this idea of having an instant brand, which I don't think is possible.
No. Well, I don't, you know, again, it's one of those things that you need to be strategic. You need to sit down and look at, you know, who are you marketing to? What is it the message that you're going to tell them? What do you want most for them to take away from it? You know, and what is the image that you want to portray to those people? And once you start thinking about that, then you can start developing, you know, how do I want to, you know, represent myself, you know, or market myself, you know, outwardly to other people. You know, in some instances, it becomes very apparent what the brand is, and some take a little bit more work. I mean, I hate to be vague about it, but again, this is one of these things that...
Well, if you can give examples, it's helpful.
Well, that's why I went back to, like, the Venus and Mars, and I'm trying to think off the top of my head who's recently done that.
Actually, Susie Orman's a pretty good one. She I think it took her, I mean, she got to superstardom after a few years,
but
she started out as a waitress.
She doesn't have kind of a catch name. She's not the Money Whisperer. She's just Susie Orman.
Yeah, but she started out as a waitress, and she was the first one to talk about money and women.
Mm-hmm.
And then she expanded to young people and money. But she's still primarily a woman thing.
She is, and she's an extraordinarily, first of all, she's one of those people that, you know, when she walks into a room, everybody's going to look at her. You know, she's very, she has a commanding presence.
Yeah.
I think a lot of her brand is just who she is as a human being and her own persona.
Right.
Because she's very... When
she's
she gets
blunt.
On the air,
she's
I remember
very
like,
blunt. Yeah.
That's right. When she was first on the air, I didn't know who she was. You know, I hadn't really, you know, seen many of her books, and I didn't really follow that type of stuff. But I remember tuning in CNBC, or she was on a talk show, and she frightened me. You know, I mean, in
yes,
a good
me too.
You know, she was like sort of so. You know, this women. You know, women can't do this, and you can't spend money that you don't have on things that you don't need. You have to take care of this first, and you can't. You know, and she
right,
was just
right.
so authoritative and so.
Right. She was like, "Wake up! You're behaving like an idiot."
Yeah, like Dr. Judy, another one who's always like, right. you know, what's the matter with you? Do I look like I have schmuck written up here on my forehead? You know, that kind of thing. She just was in your face. But she had such conviction behind everything that she said that people stopped and took notice. And
right.
for a lot of women who, you know, much older women who basically let the man handle things in the family, she was that person who gave them that wake-up call. You know, girlfriend, get a life. Get your own money, get your own bank account, do this, do that. She
right.
was that, you know, as you said, she was a real advocate for women.
And she was on a real mission. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think that that's the other thing about a brand. You can really feel what a brand does. Like, my impression is, you know, if I mean, it's funny. You know it's a brand if you want to use it more than another one. So, for instance, when I go to buy Band-Aids, I want Band-Aids.
Mm-hmm. And I want next care.
Well, it's funny because I sometimes stand there and I go, I should buy the cheaper one. It just is more
mm-hmm.
logical, but I still end up buying the one with the name, you know?
You have this, rightfully so, you have an assumption the quality is going to be better, even though if you go to the drugstore, they will always have that drugstore's own generic.
Sure. It's an it's an emotional connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think that a brand, you know you've achieved a brand if people have an emotional connection to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just my opinion. I'm not sure if there are people who study these things who have other, you know.
Are there other types of questions that are coming forward?
Well, let me check and see if we've got some more. Hang on. Let me refresh. No, we've got those. Now, people who are listening on the telephone, if you want to raise your hand, you just push star 2. We have about 10 minutes, so if anybody wants to type in another question, we can take it. You just go to the box on the left-hand side of your screen. Let's talk a little bit more about the steps that the authors can take, because I think that everybody on this call can now agree that there's name recognition, emotional connection,
mm-hmm.
And as you said, it takes an amount of time. You might want to play around with it.
Yeah, the one thing I want to stress here before we freaked out everybody is you know, it's sounding like, oh my God, this is an overwhelming task. How am I going to do this? And the thing is that you just need to start and build. You know, I look at this process of anytime you're going to build anything, you need to sort of lay a foundation. And then you start with the first layer of bricks and the second layer of bricks and everything else. And then you add the doors and the windows, and then you put the carpets and everything in the roof, whatever. And that's how you should look at it. You know, you have an ultimate goal of doing something in support of your work and your book and then hopefully your career and how all these things tie together. But I think you need to start with some, you know, fundamental things in terms of just, you know, begin by developing some early tools that you could get yourself comfortable with. You know, to get your name out there, and before you worry about the brand stuff will start coming to you. It's like people would always say to me when I was working with authors, when I was doing literary management, I don't know what I want to call my book. And I would always tell them the same thing. If you stop worrying about what you're going to call the book and just work on the book, at some point you're going to be, you know, typing out whatever it is that you're, you know, you're writing a chapter. And maybe you're reading it back, and suddenly you had a phrase, you phrased something in a certain way, and you had that aha moment with it where you said, oh, my God, that would make a great title of this book. And suddenly everything came together because you weren't busy fretting over it happening. So my advice is for, you know, instead of worrying about I have to be a brand tomorrow, is to look at the little things that you can begin doing today to build yourself up, you know, and, you know, take stock of what you're doing. Do you have all those tools in place? Because right now the internet is really critical for you developing. You have to have an audience. People need to know how to find you. It's all well and good you have a brand, but how are they going to come find you? So those things really do need to be in place, you know, whether it's a blog or a website or messages that you're putting out there, you know, a Facebook page, or you should have all of them. You know, maybe, you know, you've got, you're signed up for all these various, you know, book industry networks, you know, Goodreads and Red Room and places like that. Get yourself out there, you know, as an author as much as you can, and then start engaging with your own community of people. You know, target your market, go after those people, engage with them so they start to know who you are.
Now, how do you know if something you're doing on the social media is working? Just by the number of followers?
Because people respond to you.
Mm.
You know, I know when I do, you know, I put a lot of, you know, I work more for my clients than I do on my own stuff. But, you know, recently, just for the hell of it, somebody, I had a picture that I recently put on Facebook of a lunch that I had, and my friend's daughter happened to be in the picture, and everybody thought that was my kid for some reason. And I said, oh, I would love to claim her, but she's not. And I said, you know, I don't have a picture, you know, of anybody in my family with me on it. So I posted a picture of me and my little grandson, and I got such an overwhelming response from people on that photograph. Now, I just did it just basically to appease the curiosity of one person. And I thought, you know, I don't have anything up here. I'm just going to put this up. And people were writing comments, and everybody was giving me a like. And I can't tell you how that made me feel. It was a silly little thing. But that's exactly what winds up happening, is you do a few different things. You have to try a lot of different ways to reach people, which is why all those tools are out there right now. And when you start seeing the feedback, you see the likes, or you see you have a blog and there's comments posted, okay, maybe some of them aren't the most positive things, but hey, you struck a chord with somebody and they responded to you. And so you're able to see what that feedback is. And so you start getting energized and you start to realize, wait a minute, I just, you know, I may have rubbed somebody the wrong way or I may have touched them in a good way, but I still got a response from them, and that's what I really want to have happen. And once those things start to happen, then that winds up, I think, emotionally motivating you as, you know, as an author of wanting to do more. Oh, I'm getting this feedback. What more can I do? How can I make that happen more? And how can I use that for my advantage? And so respond to those people. Engage with them. If somebody says something nice to you, make sure that you respond to them and let them know, thank you so much for, you know, for your comment.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And engage that. And that's what happens. Conversations take place. I mean, you know, right now we spend so much of our time texting and tweeting and, you know, and doing all these things on the internet that sometimes we don't have, like, you know, real engagement. It's there a lot of people putting out a lot of things about what they think and sometimes not so much getting the feedback. And I think that when you take that moment, when somebody responds to something you've done and you take a second to turn around and respond to them, you've now, you know, forged a relationship, and that relationship becomes very valuable in then having other relationships. Maybe that person that you responded to now tells their friends, oh, I got this one.
Yeah, I mean, the one caveat I just feel like I have to throw in is that it needs to be about your business for that
mm-hmm.
to be valuable to your business.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, it, I mean, I got a great response when I was talking about quitting caffeine in November. And that was great. I mean, it made me know that people are out there, you know, reading my page on Facebook, but it didn't really have to do with my
It doesn't,
work
but you
office.
Never know. That maybe that other yeah. there's one person out there who just was going through tremendous caffeine withdrawal that, you know, saw that you did that and said, "You know what? You know, a month later goes, you know, I have this, like, proposal I've written, and I really need some editorial help." And
from somebody
you know
who
what?
Doesn't drink coffee.
You know what? I'm going to tell you, you do not realize that this is a way in which things get connected. Time and time
right.
again, when I speak to people of what was that point for them where things kind of
mm-hmm.
hit, when it clicked, it will always be something very unusual like
mm.
that. You know, it's I made a connection and somebody remembered that I did that.
Yep.
I spoke at a conference and I had somebody come up to me afterwards and engage me in a conversation, and that was it, you know. And 6 months later, I got a phone call saying, you know, you said something to me when we were standing in the corner by the wall, and, you know, I asked you something, and you said this to me, and
mm.
I really started thinking about that. And then when I had this issue come up with this project I'm working on, you know, I had to go look you up again because I wanted to, you know, I really would like to work with you because what you told me rung true.
So
and
I'm hearing a lot of humanity in what you're saying, that people want to work with, Or people want to work with real human beings who have multiple dimensions to them, but also that they want to feel that way about their authors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you would love to know that, you know, Lemony Snicket loves strawberry rhubarb pie or something, you know.
I mean, look, we're in a society yes. where, I mean, I watch enough, you know, mindless TV like most people where, you know, if a celebrity is wearing, you know, has a particular bag, that Birkin bag from Hermès, suddenly we're all interested in that bag. Or look at those shoes or whatever. I mean, we are interested in what people we admire are interested in, what music they listen to, what stores they shop in, what charities do they give their money to. It does wind up having influence. So I think that when you find common ground with your fans and your community, they keep coming back to you. You become
mm-hmm.
more real to them. So it goes beyond just what they were touched, how they got touched
right.
by what
so
they
wrote. So you in essence make yourself real. I think that's very interesting. And there's that sense of I understand who this person is.
Mhm.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think
so we're almost at the end here, and I just really want to, before we go, I want to just let people know again how they can reach you. I think I put a button up on the screen on the left, Forget Their Media.
Okay, yeah.
It's June Clark at Get Their Media. And,
June at Get Their Media, just so you know that the email address. And here's what I'm going to recommend, because I know, you know, we're talking in very generalized terms here, and people may have specific questions they'd like to ask me, and I'm very happy to address them. You know, just keep the question a little bit on the simple side. But I'm happy to receive, you know, any questions or comments or anything anybody would like to ask me. And you can write to me at June@getthermedia.com.
Cool.
Or go to the website, and I don't know if my email's up specifically there, but it's June@getthermedia.com, and feel free to ask me, you know, any questions that you have about anything pertaining to this.
I think this has been incredibly informative, a lot of information for an hour, and I just want to say thank you on behalf of all the listeners.
Yeah, and welcome, and I wish everybody the best of luck with whatever projects they're working on, and always keep in mind that the most important thing, besides worrying about, you know, don't worry about the branding, worrying about writing a really great book, and all this other stuff will start to come to you as you're true to what it is that you're doing. That I think that you find that space and that place and that hook and everything else when you're doing, you know, what's true and authentic.
Words to live by, my friends. All right, everybody, have a wonderful night. Thanks again, June, and I guess we'll talk on the next webinar.
Hey, good night.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye.